Welcome to another episode of Mission Compliance, Unleashing Growth Potential for Defense Contractors. Today, we're tackling a deceptively simple but absolutely crucial question. Why do some types of controlled unclassified information, or CUI, need extra safeguards compared to others? Think of CUI like a sea of sensitive information. Most of it follows the same basic rules, but some parts are under stricter laws, regulations, or government-wide policies. And treating them like everything else is how compliance nightmares start. So, whether you're dealing with personal privacy data, proprietary technical specs, or export-controlled info, we'll explain why one size fits all doesn't cut it and what you need to do to keep your organization out of hot water. Grab a shovel, because we're going to dig in. We're joined once again today by Mike Frieder, President of On-Call Compliance Solutions and a CMMC Professional Assessor. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Hey, always a pleasure, Roman. And I brought my spoon. I'm ready to dig in.
There you go. I do love a spoon because I love cereal. Anyway, this week we're talking about why some types of CUI require extra controls. And you mentioned before we started recording this that this is a good one. So let's jump right into this. How do CUI Basic and CUI Specified differ, and what kinds of additional controls might one require that the other doesn't?
Yeah, what and you know, what a great podcast topic, because I'll tell you, everybody is so focused on, the NIST SP-800-171 controls, CMMC, and they just like overlook this concept that, wait a minute, it can get deeper. So again, when we talk about CUI Basic, CUI Basic is your common kinds of CUI that do not have specification markings that come with them. So things like catalog item identifications, pricing information, even a lot of technical specifications, and even a lot of diagrams are, generally speaking, going to be considered CUI basic. And again, for CUI basic, they do not have any specified handling requirements outside of, the information security system where they will be stored, processed, or transmitted. NIST SP-800-171, and then the general requirements and DFARS as specified under the executive order. But there's a big but. Then there is CUI specified, and CUI specified is information that comes with additional markings or additional handling requirements per contract or per instruction from your contracting officer or prime. So, as if you thought that CUI wasn't bad enough to deal with, now you have these specified types of CUR. And the most common one, I think, is called ITAR, which is the International Traffic in Arms regulation. Basically, ITAR is specified types of information that is of national security interest that cannot be allowed to transfer or be exposed to foreign persons. So, in the case of ITAR, you have extra requirements. So first off is no non-US person should ever see ITAR information. Now that gets really, really hairy when you're talking about the idea of using a cloud solution to store, process, and transmit it. So here's an example. You take your ITAR marked PDF and you go put it in Dropbox. Well, Dropbox has an international technical support team that can at any time look into your Dropbox and go pull files out of it for whatever reason. They just have access to it. Now, again, I'm sure Dropbox has their standard set of controls, but ultimately, Dropbox is not cleared for handling ITAR information. It's just not. In fact, Office 365 is an example of that. Maybe a better example of Dropbox. Office 365, technically, you could handle CUI Basic. It's in a FedRAMP moderate environment. Actually, it's in a FedRAMP high environment. But the problem is that Microsoft has technical support people who can technically access your data all over the world, including Russia and China. So for defense information, for CUI Basic, there is no requirement that no non-US person accesses it. But when it comes to ITAR specified information, a specified type of CUI, ooh, we're in heap big trouble, because those laws state that An ITAR marked document can only be handled by a U.S. person. That's a green card holder, U.S. citizen, etc. But again, if it's a foreign national, you have to get specific permission from the Department of State, particularly the DDTC, Director of Defense Trade Control, and they have to say, "Hey, okay, all right, you're allowed to, share this information with this foreign person, and we want to know exactly why they need access to it. We want to know everything you're doing with it, that kind of thing, right?" And it's possible, right? There's technical assistance sharing agreements and things like that. But again, you have to follow some very, very specified rules. Now, there's different types of specified information. So we just talked about ITAR. Now there's another one, unclassified nuclear information, particularly something like UNNPI, or unclassified naval nuclear propulsion information. So information related to how nuclear power plants are put together and nuclear technologies and propulsion. Think nuclear powered rockets, or really more aptly, nuclear powered submarines and things like that. If you're handling UNNPI, oh boy, you got a whole slew of extra stuff you've got to comply with. I'll just give you two examples because I want to keep it reasonable on the podcast here. Two examples of handling UNNPI is, I'll give you three, why not? First off, there is a separate isolated system security plan for handling UNNPI that you have to have specific to handling unclassified nuclear information. And there's like 56 more controls there that you have to specify answers to. And again, there's a whole document. It's called, let me see here. I'm actually on the document. It's called Safeguarding of Naval Nuclear Propulsion Information, NNPI, OPNAV, INST, N9210.3. And believe it or not, it was last updated like June 7th of 2010. But nonetheless, by law, you're required, if you're going to handle this information, you have to follow the guidance in this document. And that includes a whole separate system security plan specifically for how you're going to be handling NNPI and UNNPI. One of those, there's a couple of crazy requirements there. One is now only US citizens can handle this information. So not even green card holders can see UNNPI or NNPI. And another requirement is that you have to store, process, and transmit any of this UNNPI, NNPI, which again is specified type of CUI. It must be stored, processed, and transmitted only on FIPS 140-2 or above validated hardware or using those protocols and encryption. So what that means is dramatic. That means you can't even just use a regular Office 365 GCC High email account to handle this information. It has to be an IL level 5 infrastructure, fully FIPS 140-2 encrypted at rest and in transit. And if you're handling it on site, you've got to go swap out all your network gear for FIPS validated hardware and operating systems and software, et cetera. That is not cheap. Again, we've worked with clients who've spent well in excess of $1 million updating their network to be able to handle FIPS validated hardware. So, again, I will share with you that you really need to be very careful about winning those defense contracts, and for that matter, Department of Energy contracts, because if they include a specified type of CUI, there is definitely additional stuff you have to do. There may be more expensive services that can handle ITAR restricted information you have to purchase. And that's really where a company like OnCall comes into play, is to be your eyes and ears on those kinds of things. So yeah, just a little quick summary and some examples of differences between basic CUI and specified types of CUI, Roman.
I've said it before and I'll say it again until I'm blue in the face. As somebody who came in to this company n not as a compliance person, having really no idea what it was, when I first heard of CUI, I assumed in my mind that the C stood for classified. Now, come to learn that it actually stands for controlled unclassified. But, and I've said this many times on this podcast, based on how CUI needs to be protected, you have to treat it as if the C does stand for classified. You have to treat it with special care. You have to mark it specifically, store it specifically, because if it gets out, you got a real problem. So even though it stands for controlled unclassified, you have to treat it, mark it, and move it around as if it were classified.
Yeah, and I want to be careful about that because classified networks do carry a whole different layer of security, but I think the general intent of your statement is correct.
Right.
The bottom line is that you definitely cannot just treat it like any old business information. There
Absolutely.
are very specific ways it has to be handled, even at the basic level.
And that's what I meant by that. I'm not, I classified stuff, as you said, does carry a whole other set of things. But in terms of how CUI is meant to be protected, to act as if it were classified from a very general sense is not the worst idea in the world. With that being said, what's an example of a business or technical scenario where somebody treated all CUI the same and how did it backfire?
Well, and again, I obviously would never give any specific example for confidentiality purposes, but we have had multiple clients who have, and a lot of these are older defense contractors who've been doing it for years, who have not kept up with regulatory change. Now CMMC is coming into focus. The primes are asking more and more on how this gets done, and they're forcing them to comply. And as they begin to look at how do I comply, they begin to realize, oh, wow, this is a real rat's nest. I've got information that was never marked correctly. And hey, to be really honest with you, the government didn't really always mark it correctly. So that's a problem in itself. And they don't know where the data is, they don't know what systems it flows through. And in larger enterprises, this is a significant problem. It's definitely a very significant problem that we've dealt with multiple times. And it becomes a larger project, Roman, and that's just really that's the truth of it. There are situations where it's very easy to make a company compliant because it's understood where the CUI is flowing, it's understood where it is. I've worked with clients who have taken years with large teams to try to figure out where this information is. And we've advised those companies on how to do that, when to do that, how to set priorities is a really big one. What chicken and egg? Do you identify where the CUI is first, or do you build a compliance system first? We've tackled those types of challenges before. And what does it lead to? Well, the problem is it leads to unexpected expense and lower profit margins when you don't anticipate these things. So as an example, obviously the DoD and primes need to be charged more money when they are making these mandates on you. Well, if you don't know to charge them more money because you're going to have to run a more expensive information system, then the simple reality is that it's money lost, right? I mean, again, other examples are, you've got to, go spend $1 million upgrading network infrastructure. And when you go spend that money on network infrastructure, basically what winds up happening is that that's just an expense you didn't factor into the profit margin of the original deal you won. So yeah, it can be incredibly, incredibly harmful.
Absolutely. Keeping in mind the confidentialities and not getting too specific, what's one safeguarding change that you've recommended when a client discovered they were handling specified CUI without realizing it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, the first thing that we do is something that I think, most companies really don't know to do, which is, we kind of stop and we go pull a contracts person, pull a procurement person into the room. That's where your line of defense really has to start. And by the way, this is an area where I got to tell you, we are so unique in this space. Most companies are really, really focused on the 110 controls and the 320 assessment objectives. And that's like all that they do. And they have no idea, I mean, no clue that there is like all this law and requirements behind that are not necessarily just NIST SP 800-171. And this is a great example. That's why I think it's such a great episode for us to, kind of go over because in those cases, no control is going to tell you what your requirement is, right? Because you're not looking at the right controls. You may not know to go look at, OpNav, whatever, whatever. You just may not have a clue it exists. So anyway, on call, what we would do is we would pull a contracts person in the room and say, hey, you've got to watch out for ITAR. You've got to watch out for anything, excuse me, that says the word nuclear in it. And that needs to raise red flags. You need to call us back if you find that. We need to do cost estimates on what it's going to take for you to be able to correctly handle this information that they are telling you is going to be a part of your contract. And this has an extra expense, and you need to charge them extra for this with margin, okay, with overhead, with margin. So that's the first thing that we would do, Roman. And then the next thing is, we tack on another consulting day and we say, all right, let's go through, again, an example of like NNPI. Let's go through and let's go build out your unclassified nuclear system security plan, because that's completely required as a separate thing. And then, we talk about ITAR. We have an amazing consultant that we work with when it comes to ITAR. We know a lot about ITAR ourselves, but if you have like no ITAR program in place and you register with DDTC, or you have very unique needs, like you're a foreign-owned company, we have like the best team in the world when it comes to ITAR. And EAR and import-export restrictions, which are all Department of State issues. So we have those consultants, and we stop and we bring them in, and we build you out an ITAR program, and we get you registered with the government the way you're supposed to legally be. We do all those things, and so those are, again, for every specified type of CUI, there is a different prescriptive way that you're supposed to comply to follow the law. And I would say that with virtually any of them, a failure to do so can cost your company millions of dollars. And it doesn't matter if you're a small business or a big business, it's not a small business issue. You're violating a federal law. And the last thing you want is, the federal government coming after you and the Department of Justice coming after you. It's scary stuff.
All right, for this week's silly question, this requires you to think a little bit outside of the box. So open up the box, crawl out of it, and let your mind go where it will. If CUI Basic and CUI Specified walked into a compliance bar, what embarrassing behavior would each one get in trouble for?
Oh boy. Well, that's a good question. That's a good
I
question.
told you it was weird.
What embarrassing behavior?
Told you it was weird.
This is a strange question. This is a very strange question.
Isn't it?
CUI Basic walked into a bar, and if CUI Basic walked into a bar and had an embarrassing behavior, I don't know. Maybe CUI basically walking around with some toilet paper hanging out of its backside. It's out of its pants. It's like if you get caught doing that, you're definitely looking pretty silly at the bar, right? Like you're pretty silly looking if you don't comply with DFARS NIST and get ready for CMMC. But it's not the end of the world. CUI specified might be like walking around the bar with no pants on. Bad things are definitely going to happen. And it's pretty darn embarrassing. And worst of all, if you didn't bring your pants with you, you might need to get out of the defense game. I mean, you might just need to run out of the bar. I got nothing better than that, Roman. That's a very interesting one. I wouldn't say you have me fully stumped. You got me half stumped on this one.
In a way that I don't understand at all, you still managed to make that somewhat relevant, even though you talked about no pants.
That's right. I'll find a way to make no pants relevant.
there you go. And we're not talking about your company's holiday party. And that wraps up another great episode of Mission Compliance. We hope our discussion today has provided you with valuable insights, practical strategies, and inspiration to navigate the ever-evolving world of defense. We'd like to thank Mike for joining us and talking about the very important topic of CUI Basic, CUI Specified, and knowing the difference. Thanks, Mike.
Hey, always a pleasure, Roman. Thank you.
But the conversation doesn't end here. We encourage you to continue exploring these topics and connect with us via our social media channels. Share your thoughts, ask questions, and engage with fellow listeners using the hashtag Mission Compliance Podcast. If they haven't already, what should they do, Mike?
Well, they should like, subscribe, and you know what? Tell a friend, because we're out here helping defense contractors. And if they need to get compliant with DFARS, NIST, and CMMC, if they're handling ITAR, if they're handling nuclear information, you know what? We can help them.
You heard him. Don't forget to like, subscribe, or follow on your favorite podcast platform so that you know when new episodes like this one are released. And we'd really appreciate it if you could take a moment to rate and review the show. Your feedback helps us to continue to bring you thought-provoking episodes and high-quality content. Join us next time as we delve further into the dynamic world of defense, security, and industry innovation. Until next time, Take care, stay informed, and make compliance your mission. See you next time.
Thanks, everybody.